We bring in Jim Rosenhaus, one of the voices of the Cleveland Indians. Rosie, a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you?
Did you say 1 week from today?
I did.
Yeah. I need to start packing then. I better get ready.
when do you take off for Arizona?
What's that?
When do you take off?
Actually, about a week from today.
Wow.
Actually, a week from tomorrow, heading out there. So it should be good.
Should be awesome. I know we're all really, really anxious. And, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit since the abrupt end to last season. I think everybody's really, really anxious and really chomping at the bit to get things going because of the way the year ended for the Tribe. And it feels like so much has happened since the end of last season. And the latest thing coming up in the baseball world before we dive into some Tribe-specific topics, you know, this rift that's going on between the players' union and the owners, this idea. Agents are presenting this idea that there are still too many really good free agents out there. The owners, they believe, are colluding. They're not giving these guys the deals that they believe they should be getting. Just wanted to get your take on that. Seeing this thing from the inside, I think both sides definitely do have a gripe. But look, in the court of public opinion, it's going to be awfully difficult for any agent to sway the general public to feel sorry for these players.
And I think that's usually the case in regardless of the sport. When there's been a labor stoppage, it always seems like, from the fans' perspective, these guys are getting paid so much money. What could they possibly, want to go out on strike for, have a labor stoppage for? But I think in this particular instance, what you've seen is because front offices are relying so much more on analytics and really taking a good hard look at what a player's value is and backing it up with numbers and science, whatever you want to call it, there's a lot less impulse buying. And I think that hurts the players and the agents because, I mean, gosh, over the years, baseball's littered with free agent signings that either went bad right out of the chute or the player was good for 1 year and then the remaining years of a multi-year contract were not so good, maybe because of their age or some warts that didn't necessarily show up when the signing happened. So I think what you're seeing is front offices are smarter, and as a result, agents are having a harder time convincing them of a player's value over a long period of time. Now, I think there are certain spots, and I know, you know, you can look at Scott Boras and say, well, you know, it's his fault or whatever, but I think a specific case, and again, these are reports, but in the case of Eric Hosmer, the reports are that he's been offered 7 years at $140 million from the Royals. I mean, that just seems ludicrous to turn down, but, sometimes you just wonder if he has more than the player's best interests in mind. Obviously, there's commission for him. They look at setting the market for other players after him. But I hearken back to Jared Weaver when he was with the Angels, whether they were California, Anaheim, Los Angeles, of Orange County. When he was with the Angels, he grew up not far from Anaheim Stadium and wanted to pitch for the Angels. And when he came to free agency after a good stretch in his career with the Angels, the dream team for him in the major leagues, he was represented by Boras. And he told him, he said, look, I really want to stay here. And the usual stuff was going on where these great offers reportedly were made and turned down and things like that. And finally, Weaver said, hey, I want to stay here. I don't need to be the top dollar guy. I want to stay here. And so that's what I think is hard for fans to see when there's offers reportedly out there that would seem to make a player happy and they're not taken for other reasons. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying that that's what I think is going on here. And I think it'll all iron itself out. Guys will sign, and maybe not for as much as they wanted, but I think they'll get in there at some point here in spring training.
They will, no question. I mean, look, it's crunch time for a lot of these guys, too. The pressure is definitely on these agents because they've got to get these guys into camp. And this is a discussion I'm sure we'll have again somewhere down the road. But to get into some tribe talk here, obviously a lot of expectations going into this season. A lot of the other teams in the division seem to have regressed. But that doesn't mean the tribe doesn't have some questions. They still do have a few heading into spring training. Obviously losing Carlos Santana left a bit of a void, but they filled that right away with Yonder Alonso. What are some of the biggest questions you still have about the tribe as we head into spring training next week?
Well, I think questions would be outfield, based on the health of Michael Brantley. When can he play, and realistically, will he be ready for opening day, which we may not know till we get to Goodyear and see how far along he is coming back from the ankle surgery. But even with that, the outfield, I think, might be a little bit light, and I'm sure they would love to add a veteran outfielder there if they could. And then relief in terms of their bullpen, the bridge between the starters and to get to Andrew Miller and Cody Allen, which still make up a great back end of the pen, but you do need to replace a ton of quality innings and appearances from Brian Shaw, who left as a free agent, and then some good stuff from Joe Smith, too, who also left as a free agent. So they could be, I think they'll be on the search for some more arms for middle relief as well. And then I think the other question is, I know they said it at Tribe Fest that Kipnis would be the second baseman, but it'll be interesting to see how Jason Kipnis responds here in spring training after an off season where his name has been bandied about in trade rumors. And maybe it wasn't clear cut that he would come back and return as the second baseman. So I think those will be the, you know, kind of the things to watch here as we get into pitchers and catchers reporting and then the start of full scale spring training.
Rosie, as the year came to an end last season, it was a little shorter, I think, than all of us had anticipated. But I remember thinking back, you know, maybe it's kind of a blessing in disguise because this team's obviously going to be that much hungrier when they go out on there. And I think it was a couple of weeks ago, Tito kind of echoed that same sentiment, saying they were going to come out with a vengeance when they hit the field for the start of the season this year, looking to get past that first round, obviously, and make their way back to another World Series. Obviously, there's a lot that goes into that. But at Tribe Fest, when you've seen the players, do you get that same sort of feeling from the guys that they're ready to get back on the field and make another run at this?
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny because both seasons, the last two, ended in disappointment. But when you go to Game 7 of the World Series, mm-hmm. and I think you were the underdog in that series going into the series, regardless of how it transpired with, you know, the way it ended and all that, there was still that feeling of, wow, what a great season and what an accomplishment, and it just didn't work out in the end. And then there was the idea of spring training taking care of players who had played that extra month, especially pitchers. So it was a different kind of feel, whereas this time around, there wasn't the full month of October being played. Big-time disappointment that they didn't go deeper. They felt they should have won that series and were the better team going into that series. So there is, you know, a lot of players have that chip on their shoulder, that good chip on the shoulder to really get back after it. They're excited to get going. There's a little less wear and tear from the postseason that wasn't, so to speak. And I think it's you're catching them in a real good frame of mind, I think, heading into spring training.
We're talking Tribe with Jim Rosenhaus here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And, you know, Rosie, you talked about the bullpen and how there might be some questions to see who some of those middle relievers are to kind of bridge the gap between the starters and the back end of this bullpen. A lot of the things that we've heard the last couple of years is just how loaded to the gills this system is with arms specifically. And I think when you have that discussion, you really get into an interesting debate as to who serves what role and which guys are really on the brink of really making a very big impact on this pitching staff. Are there some names out there that maybe have only slightly scratched the surface that could be big, big players for the Tribe and the bullpen this year that maybe we haven't thought of?
You know, I don't necessarily think it was pitchers who were at AAA Columbus a year ago and did not get an opportunity. Their best pitching prospects are, and their top one would be Tristan McKenzie, But by all accounts, he's still a ways away from the major leagues, at least a year. I think it would be surprising if he saw action up here this year. But I think the interesting thing about the Indians' bullpen is to see what happens at the back end of the rotation. There's a chance that Danny Salazar doesn't make the rotation, or if he does, Josh Tomlin doesn't make the rotation, or maybe even Mike Clevenger doesn't make the rotation. And in certain cases there, they can't go back to AAA. Ryan Merritt would be another one. You know, they're all, I mean, Tomlin's a veteran. He's not going to go back, but would they consider, if they don't see him as that back end of the rotation guy anymore, would they consider him or Salazar in the bullpen? I think Salazar is really intriguing because he could be a back-end guy with his stuff, but when they've used him out there in the past, he didn't throw enough strikes to be effective. So there's some intriguing possibilities there with arms that are already here, and it just may depend on where they feel they're best suited. So, and then you'll see someone come out of the blue. I mean, Tyler Olson, if you had said this time a year ago that he would have been a dominant left-hander, wouldn't allow a run over 30 appearances, I think you would have been scratching your head. So there's probably some pitchers that we're not even thinking about right now that can make an impact before it's all said and done.
Rosie, we'll cut you loose on this. There's a guy out there, I think, that hasn't really gotten talked about enough during this offseason, a guy that certainly has been flying under the radar. And he's a guy that was on the opening day roster last year. You know, a lot of people bring up the idea of what do you do with the corner outfield spots, and then the debate comes into play, what do you do with Kipnis? If he stays on the roster, does he stay at second base? Do you put him in the outfield? But one guy who I think certainly turned a bit of a corner last year, at least offensively, was Yandy Diaz. And you wonder if there's going to be a spot for him on the opening day roster, because while a lot of people say that maybe he's better suited to play on the infield rather than be in one of the corner outfield spots, if he continues to progress the way he has the last couple of years, that's a really tough bat to keep out of the lineup.
And it will be interesting. And, you know, I think he made some progress a year ago. Was probably better at third base than many expected. When he was down there the first month of the season, almost, he actually played better defense than he did at the plate. So, but yeah, the bat's intriguing, no question. I think they'd like to see him hit for a little bit more power. He's still looking for his first major league home run, so that hasn't come into play yet. But man, is he a strong kid, and you would think, at some point, you know, usually power is the last thing to come for a major leaguer if they're going to hit for power. And he certainly is strong enough. It may just be his approach at the plate that he's continuing to refine. But he is interesting. There's no question about that. And he'll bear watching this spring and beyond, because he may go a long way toward forcing his way into the picture at some point.
Yes, I think that's definitely a name to watch in spring training, no doubt about that. Well, next Wednesday is Valentine's Day. It's the first day of spring training. Dare I say, it's a rosy outlook for Indians fans everywhere.
It's got to be, right?
See, he does this all day, Rosie. It's amazing. I'm still here.
He hasn't walked out yet. We're celebrating our one-year anniversary of this up in a couple weeks. Rosie, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it very much, and we look forward to talking to you again during spring training.
Got it. Thank you.
All righty. Jim Rosenhaus with the Cleveland Indians Radio Network joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.